Good morning, everyone, and thank you for stopping by or watching us on your video link. Very interesting report this morning, and it really shows that the U.S. Is an island of supply, I think is the best way to put it. A record large corn yield, record large soybean yield, 165 in the corn, 44 in the beans, record large crops in both, and they will be needed. At the same standpoint, the USDA raised spring wheat yields and gave us an additional 49 million bushels, bumping up that crop. So even though acreage in spring wheat, in total wheat was down 6.5 million acres from last year, we ended up with a crop far larger. So that being said, that is the island of supply in the United States, and we are looking at big demand forthcoming from that. And the reason being is if this report was done with normal Russian weather, we could all basically call it bearish and go home for the winter. Unfortunately, though, with the Russians having one of their worst droughts in decades, we now become the world's storefront in terms of grain and oilseed products. And so the USDA, I think, did a very good job, and maybe the most important of elements of this report was indeed their adjustments, if you will, to our Russian and FSU-12 counterparts. They cut FSU-12 wheat production by 13 million metric tons. That's a record in my data from a July to an August crop report. They took a machete to the Russian wheat crop, dropping it 8 million metric tons, down pretty much in line with what our private people have it at 45 million metric tons. They dropped the Kazakh crop to 11.5, that's down 2.5, and Ukrainian crops down 3. So again, these are significant drops along the FSU. They are still carrying the Kazakhs and Ukrainians as exporters of wheat and corn. That is to be debated in coming months, but nonetheless, a big reduction in world wheat end stocks drops accordingly to somewhere in the vicinity of where we hear, you know, in the 170s. And so a big drop in wheat. Paris wheat this morning when I left was up about $4.50. It's kind of been the leader in the markets. Synthetically, in some of the swap markets, we were trading up somewhere in the vicinity of 5 to 10 cents in wheat. The swap market in corn was somewhere offered at unchanged, bid down at about 4 to 5 cents. Beans were down about 5 to 8 cents. So we could have a mixed opening here, but there's plenty of fodder for everyone. And the big question going forward is going to be what to do with corn and soybean crops. Do they increase in September and October, or do they decrease? Historically speaking, there is a precedence in the last 7 years for them to increase. We'll see how weather finishes out here in the end of August, and we kind of go forward from there. But the key element for me anyway was this dire Russian crop loss of 8 million metric tons and the sharp fall in world stocks, and in particular the big increase in U.S. wheat exports of 200 million bushels, with 100 of that coming in protein wheat, HRW. My view is that the world comes to us for protein wheat, for milling wheat. That's what the Russians export. And until we get into the Southern Hemisphere harvest down south in Australia and Argentina in December and January, the big question is going to be, can our export facilities at the Gulf and PNW handle all the business from China in beans, the world in wheat, and then the increase in feed grains from a host of sectors around the world?
Okay. Thank you. Jerry?
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate everyone showing up today, both here in the audience and on the links. As Mr. Bassey mentioned, the former Soviet Union numbers today were just kind of breathtaking, really speaking. We haven't seen that kind of number adjustments from the USDA in quite some time, but when you're talking about 100-degree temperatures in Moscow for weeks on end here, and that continuing on into the Siberian spring wheat areas, definitely a big factor there. And moving up the demand for wheat, and also the ongoing concern about this dry weather over there is that it's going to also impact their winter wheat plantings, which are further to the east. Next week there is a expectation of a weather change for the area out there that has been most hard hit on spring wheat, but there's not a lot of moisture coming with this lower temperatures. And the heat is moving actually a little bit further west, and it has been at least this week, and so there's ongoing concerns about how much planting they'll do for next year. So the wheat numbers on a worldwide basis were brought down to 174 million metric tons, down from 187 million metric tons. That was about what I was expecting, because they were going to end up bringing back some of the demand features here because of the higher prices on a worldwide basis, because they did end up taking down the world production numbers here by 16 million metric tons. The wheat does drive other things, as Stan mentioned, moving on into the coarse grains and corn on a worldwide basis. The fact that they increased the U.S. wheat number by 200 million, but they also increased corn. God, there's too many numbers there after a while. They did 200 million on that one also. And I think to some extent that particular one could get a little stronger here as we go through time. From that standpoint, the impact of all the coarse grain implications on into Ukraine and on into Eastern Europe will also, I think, be a factor of pulling more demand into the U.S. as we move through the year. Looking at the U.S. crops here, the 165 bushel number here on corn, 44 bushel on beans, both those, as you mentioned, has been record numbers. I think the interesting twist on those is that I'd have to say that some of the disease issues that I think I've been really concerned about in soybeans because of the amount of heavy rains that have occurred here in really the two major states of the U.S., bean production in Illinois and in Iowa and parts of eastern Nebraska and South Dakota also. But there's a lot of FBS talk kind of popping up out in Iowa. I think we're going to have issues there about how can we finish this thing. We've also had drier weather in the eastern Corn Belt. We are going to start to taper off a little bit on temperatures next week. I don't know that we're going to get a lot of rain with that, they say, at least at this in our forecast. So that being the case, I think the yields on beans could sit, we might see a high wire mark on those soybean yields at this point. We got 360 million bushels of carryover stock, so I wouldn't consider that a that we're going to end up running out of beans anytime soon. But I'd have to say that even on corn, 165 bushels, last year's yields didn't pan out when we finally got them out of the bins here by last June. We'll see if this turns out to be the case this time. I think that some of the yields in eastern and southern areas still are under stress. So right now, looking at definitely a little higher opening on wheat and corn, maybe, and beans. I'd have to be very cautious, though, about how much follow-through we're going to have in these soybean and corn and soybean prices here. We're right around the corner from harvest time. Soybeans actually might be harvested in the south right now, and we'll have corn being harvested in early September here in Illinois. So I'd have to be cautious on higher money kind of reactions here in the next day or two. For producers out there, so you take advantage of making sure they have their supplies, have their all extra corn that they might have marketed, and that we've got some downside risk yet in the early September.
We do have questions on the phone. Can we take the first one, please?
Yes, the first question comes from Todd Gleason from WILL Radio.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Jerry. First, if you could both pronounce your names for me so that I get them correct. And then secondly, I'd like both of you to take up the wheat crop in Russia and the real impact that it might have comparing today's marketplace to 2008 when we had the large run-up.
Jerry, do you want to go first?
Yes, Todd. This is Jerry Goodell from North America Risk Management. Looking at the wheat scenario, yeah, everybody's trying to look back at 2007 and 8 and make the potential that we might go over $10 on wheat. I think that in 2007-8 was a combination of a very tight world supply. Back then, we were talking about carryover stocks, 120 and going lower. Now we just mentioned that this month's number is 176 million metric tons. The short crop situation has developed really between the exporting community. It hasn't really become an exporting world supply shortage because we have a tremendous amount in our back pocket with a billion bushels virtually in our pocket. So we can supply the wheat. It's going to be a little bit of a logistical nightmare to try to get wheat out, soybeans to China, and also get plenty of corn out. So it's going to be a little bit of a madhouse at times to get everything out through our export channels. But have we seen the highs in wheat? I don't know if we've seen the highs in wheat because of the fact of how much, I know that the technical actions of last week give you that feeling, but I think there's still an issue about where are we going to be going for next year, how much wheat can we get planted in the former Soviet Union, and that's still ahead of us. Plus, we've got some issues, I think, in Australia on wheat prices. The USDA did increase their crop size down there, but the western areas of Australia are very below normal on precip, and if that area goes south on them, even if the eastern part of Australia is in good shape, we take out another 3 to 5 million metric tons or something like that out of the world exportable supplies, as I call them. That thing could change a little bit more, but short term, I think that we're definitely not anything like 2007, 2008.
Okay, thanks. And Dan, I think Todd asked you to pronounce your first and last name.
Todd, it's Basse, B-A-S-S-E, and I agree with Jerry. Really the big feature, I think, for grains is going to be the planting of the Russian winter crop. And if Russia, I want everybody to think out of there, out for 1 year. If Russia's out for 2 years, that changes the dynamics of our markets considerably. And so that rain determines if it's a 1 or 2 year phenomena. If it's 2 years, then we can maybe start to think about those 2008 levels if indeed some other traditional exporter in the world has a weather problem. So these are supply-driven markets. At least that's the way it started out. The U.S. benefits from demand, but we need to see moisture if we're going to stop this supply-driven rally that we have right now.
Okay. Thanks. Another call from the phone, please.
Okay. And that comes from Jackie Fatka from Feedstuffs.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. Maybe if you want to just talk a little bit about, obviously, with the wheat market, what this means for the feed wheat and U.S. domestic corn prices. Could we see a lot more corn going overseas, and where could we see some of that going?
Dan?
Yeah, well, you know, this year the USDA back in July had us pegged at 131 million metric tons of wheat feeding. It was only 2 or 3 years ago that number was down in the lower 100s. And so kind of like corn feed residual, there's a lot of statistical residual or slough, if you will, in that whole feed number. We think it can come down. I mean, I'm using a 117 or 119 number right now, but there will be some switches. I think one of the unforeseens in this report is a drop in the EU wheat crop. I imagine that the EU has an inability to get their feed wheat from the FSU 12. In other words, the Ukrainians or the Russians. They were importing somewhere on 5 million tons, and so I don't think the EU will not import U.S. corn, but they could look at Brazilian corn. And I do think that the U.S. corn export numbers could probably, in this country, due to greater demand, could rise another 100 or 150 million bushels at a minimum, and we'll take that along as we go. One of the problems I'm having as an analyst right now is my commercial friends keep telling me that the Gulf and PNW are pretty much sold out of fobbing capacity. By that, I'm saying loadout from now until the middle of December. If that's the case and the Chinese are buying 1 million tons of beans a week, the corn demand export profile is shifting upwards, as we saw with sales this morning, and we now have wheat for sale, it's a lot of pressure on our export profile to get it all out the door from now until when Latin America comes on board in mid or late December.
Jerry?
Yes, definitely I agree with Dan about the prospect of additional corn exports. As he mentioned, the feed wheat scenario here, interestingly, I just checked back and looked at the USDA's numbers. They did not really make an adjustment in feed wheat demand. Now, I'm not sure that we consider, though, the quality of the feed wheat this year is going to have to be quite a bit better than it has been. But I guess to some extent, the shrinking of supplies of wheat from the exportable suppliers, being the top 6 or 7 ones around the world that do most of it, and that definitely has shrunk up. And moving things back around, and how that all gets shifted through the demand issues, pulling over into the barleys, which also has been impacted here in Ukraine, the world's largest barley exporter, and other producers around the world here. Tightening things down a little bit, we're going to boost up that corn demand issues and have a chance to expand that demand base. The key question is there's our 1.3 carryover stock for this year stay about that level? Do we get enough additional supplies out there in the field to make it stay the same, or do we start bringing that on down, get closer to 1.1? That kind of number will give you a carryover stocks to use ratio that will be tighter than we've been since back in, golly, off the top of my head, I think it's 2005, the last time we had that smaller one. from there. And so we've got a situation going here where it's very important that we continue to have good crops and good potential. We start nipping away at potential here on sizes here or any other place in the world on feed grains, soybeans. Soybeans has a little bit more room to go. We got potentially more opportunities in South America if the price stays trend. But right now, real important that we continue to have good crops in the U.S.
Okay, thank you. I know we have more calls on the phone. Can we take a couple from the floor, please? Mike, do you want to go first?
Mike McGinnis, agriculture.com. Based on this report, these two questions, I guess, one being, do you see the acreage battle heating up based on this report, or do you think that the acreage will stay in the mind of farmers about the same? And also, could you comment about cash grain basis at harvest and where you see it being, what levels at harvest? Thank you.
Jerry, do you want to go first?
All right. Going back to the issue of basis there that you talked about, I think things will stay about where they're at right now. I don't see a big change in harvest time basis here. That depends a lot. We're going to have lots of supply. We're also, I think, going to have plenty of demand and need to move it through the system and that. The wheat basis, I think, is a subtle part of your question there. It really wasn't the harvest type basis on corn and soybeans. Will wheat basis improve? Yes. Will it get where it should be? Probably not. Because of the issues that have occurred with the size of the U.S. hard-red winter wheat crop, also the issues of concern about the protein levels and the liberal supplies and all those issues tied together. But I think we will see expanded export demand that will start to move some of the wheat there in the plains. That first question again, can you repeat this?
The acreage battle,
of course. Yeah, yes. The acreage battle definitely has already started. You and Dan and I both have got calls about people say, I'm going to do last year's wheat. I'm going to think about doing more. I haven't done wheat in 5 years. I think I'm going to sell some. As well, if you're going to raise it, you better sell some. That's the key issue of this thing in the wheat. That longer term, that's a sign that we're going to be bringing back last year's decline of acres that didn't get planted because of weather, and we could even add another million. I'm kind of in that 3.5 million more acre increase already. The interesting part of that is it takes it away from most likely the corn acres that then have the beans come back. You got to lose bean acres out here. We can lose a little bit of bean acres and still be all right if South America comes through. If South America has a problem this winter, who knows? It'd be unbelievable next spring on an acreage battle because I know there's lots of theory that there's lots of CRP ground and we're going to find additional acres. The quality of that ground is very poor, and I don't think that we're the 250 million acres of the core crops of the U.S. is going to find a lot of extra acres unless we get prices way up there like we did in 2008 where we can have everybody plant every river bottom in the country.
Dan?
Mike, I think Jerry did a good job. My grids show we need about another 5 to 6 million acres planted next year. Now, there's 4.2 million coming out of the CRP program. I agree, Jerry may have it. That comes back into production. But, you know, obviously the battle is there for new crop. And so it's we're kind of back in the same fishbowl we were a couple years ago in that regards. And I do think that wheat farmers will be planting and expanding their acreage. Unknown in this whole thing is how the biofuel debate plays out. I mean, we've got the ethanol subsidy up for renewal at the end of this year. We saw what happened to biodiesel last year. I mean, to me, it's a big deal, and politicians at the moment seem to be losing their heart on biofuels. And so that will play large into the price outlook and the planning vision that farmers want to have next spring. In terms of basis, big crops, big demand, we usually bottom near or just before harvest, and in my work, we tend to firm then heading into the middle part of the crop year. So I'm kind of telling producer clients that if you need to make sales, you're better doing it on the board or somewhere like that. I think that basis will firm from some of these rather ugly levels we have right now.
Okay. Can we do another one from the floor, please? Bruce?
Hey, guys. Bruce Blythe from Vance Publishing. Just wondering if you could briefly address the impact for the beef and pork producers from these numbers today. again, we have record corn and bean crops coming, but ending stocks were reduced and farm prices were raised. So wondering, elaborate a little on what the message is for them in terms of feed prices and feed supplies over the next 6 to 12 months. The next question, more general, kind of a food price assessment. What's this mean for the consumer and food prices in the next 12 months or so, particularly in meat, because again we saw a reduction in the beef and pork production for the U.S. this year.
Dan?
Yeah, Bruce, thank you. Obviously, the Russian drought has changed the outlook for profitability and grain prices for the livestock producer in the United States, and he needs to be more acute now in terms of using market dips to get forward coverage. His profitability is probably going to be diminished somewhat, and it could limit the expansionary cycle that he was about ready to enter in. There's two things that have really happened to livestock farmer. It's been Russia's been number one, but second of all has been this heat across much of the central and eastern U.S., and we're hearing that's causing problems for sow mortality rates and sow conception rates. And so it doesn't look to us like the pork industry is ready to move back into expansion. We've known that the cattle industry has been fighting expansion, high prices. We have a dollar bid for April cattle going for next year, and it shows me anyway that meat prices are probably the biggest risk for the U.S. consumer in terms of seeing higher food costs. You know, there's 3.5 to 5 cents of wheat in a loaf of bread. Okay, so that goes up a penny or two. That's not a big deal. But it's the meat side of our plate that I think has the potential anyway to get spicier than it already has.
Jerry?
Yes, I agree particularly on the grain side, the impact here on human consumption values is going to be pretty minor. Producers out there definitely need to take advantage of opportunities that the setbacks over the next 3 to 5 weeks going into the mid-September or early October period to get some of that coverage out there, because it's going to be an interesting scenario as we go on into the February-March period, the acreage battle, how the South American crops are looking, things of that nature. From there, definitely the profitability situations on chickens and pork definitely have been tightened up here. I've also heard a lot of issues about the heat impacting some of the turkey output for this year already from the standpoint of losses there. And the cattle side of the thing, the supply side of cattle kind of set the tone for the price situation for beef more than I think the price of corn does. The attitude right now is that they seem to be taking advantage of the prices right now to move older cows and maybe bring on some heifers, so we're not going to have maybe the strong of beef calf situation as we've had in the past. And that kind of world, the consumer out there has the most risk of upside price increases in the beef.
Okay. Can we please go back to the phone?
And we have a question from Jack Fortry from Financial Times.
Oh, hi there. I'd just like to come back to a point that you made earlier, Dan, looking at the U.S. export facilities and how much pressure they're going to be under with the U.S. being, you know, the world's key supplier for now all three of the grains. Can you just talk a bit more about that and whether you see that being a problem or whether you think the export facilities can cope?
Well, Jack, I imagine we can cope on this whole thing. I think we'll get through it all, and I think we'll work and run around the clock down at the Gulf and P&W to get stuff off the board, and could even bring in, you know, other facilities like Norfolk and a few others that we haven't been using for a while. You know, but the problem we have is it's been maybe 20 years since a lot of investment has been put into the elevation side of it. By elevation, I mean, you know, loading grain for export into elevator, pumping it on the vessel. As we saw the Latin Americans come on, and then we had the Europeans becoming more aggressive, commercial grain companies didn't think putting investment into silos and loading facilities would made a good idea out of the U.S. So we're going to be able to cope with it, but it is going to be a struggle. At some point, it will limit the ability to the U.S. to fully realize the demand in the world market. And so some of that will get shifted to other destinations, not because we don't want to sell it, but because we can't. And so, you know, once we get our friends in Australia and Argentina back online for wheat, December, January, that'll help a little bit. But I believe the Chinese in their buying of the last 8 days, China's bought U.S. soybeans now 8 days in a row. I think one of their big concerns is not so much about price, but making sure they have a spot in the lineup to get loaded. And so when you're talking about a million metric tons, you know, a week being loaded or shipped to them, that's a big strain on the world grain export profile. So it's something we're concerned about. I think we'll manage through it. But some may do, some of the smaller countries may have to struggle and get it in containers or by different methods from different countries.
Jerry,
thanks,
do you have
any? No, I think Dan did a great job of covering that subject. It definitely is a subject that I have started to take note of myself. It's an area that, from the standpoint of demand strains, how to pull through things, how you move things around, you can do some shifting back and forth in the short term and move things from different ports or different locations and come back and do things into the spring to compensate. I don't think at this point at least, I don't think we're at a point that we're going to constrain our exports because we can't move it. I think they'll ultimately we'll be able to get it to people that need it and when they get, and be able to get also maybe expand these exports on corn at least a little bit as we go through the year. South America is going to be real interesting, though. If La Nina has any kind of impact on their output, I'm not sure what that does to bean prices next March and April. Right now with 65 million, the expectations is this virtually nearly a record crop like this year for Brazil. And they're talking about expanding more bean area down there, but the key thing is that the appetite of the Chinese right now with a million metric tons a day, or a million metric tons a week, I should say, on demand is a huge, huge factor that the world has to supply, and I think that's the reason why the Chinese have been a constant buyer in these markets.
Okay, can we do one more on the phone, and then we'll come back to the floor?
Okay, and that question comes from Stuart Doan from AgriPulse.
Thank you very much. Good morning. The corn and bean markets went into this report basically at $4 a bushel and $10 a bushel, respectively. Given the market psychology coupled with what was in these reports today, that was $4 and $10 numbers. Are they likely to be the minimums, the floors here between now and when next year's crop's planted? Thank you.
Jerry, do you want to go first?
All right. I've been kind of peeking around the corner here because we do have harvest coming at us here near term. As I mentioned, we've got some harvesting going on in the Mid-South right now on soybeans. In general, I think you're right. The $4 and $10 are there. I think in the near-term situations here, though, I think you have some downside issues on soybeans. If we're cooling off next week in the U.S., the moisture situations don't look like they're going to be that great for the Eastern Corn Belt, but at least we're going to get some of the stifling heat and humidity out of the air. And so in that world, I sense that we potentially might have some pullback possibilities into the next week or even in the first part of September here from that standpoint. My downside situation, though, on soybeans is in the route the 950 zone right now, 950, 960, 65 maybe. Not that far away, really speaking. Corn, we do have some same issues there, too. We got a big crop projected at us here in the 165 yield, and I'd anticipate that also to pull back here, back towards the 375, maybe 365, 375 zone. I'm not sure that. At one time, I thought 350 was going to be a possibility, but I think that's out the window here with the export demand structures it is right now, because there's just going to be too many people need to get this stuff moved through the system. But I definitely encourage the producers to buy that setback. And the same situation, if there's opportunities here in the 425 to 440 zone to sell corn in the next 10 days, they're up to September for some reason rather than weather, if something doesn't happen, cool off next week in Russia or here, and soybeans, I'd be taking advantage of the current prices to have everything tidied up. Don't be anticipating the fact that these prices are going to always be here every day. We're also impacted by the world economics.
Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jerry did a great job, and he and I are pretty close on downside potentials. I've been using 370 to 385 on spot corn futures. I've been using 940 to 960 on beans. I've been using about 650 to 630 on spot. Part I have, which is, are we in a deflationary world, and what do grain prices mean in a deflationary world? I mean, $4 corn, $10 beans are already pretty doggone high, historically speaking. If the world is slipping and the U.S. economy is slipping into deflation and the Chinese economy is cooling, how does that manifest itself? I don't know if we really know. I know I don't know as an analyst, but it's something that I think we've got to watch day to day and week to week in terms of gauging market mentality and whether our fund buyers turn into fund sellers at some point as they want to bank some profits.
Okay. Can we please go back to the floor, Anna?
Hi. I'm Anna Raff from Dow Jones, visiting from New York today on this very exciting day. Dan, I'd like to return quickly to something that you said, that if Russia was out for 2 years, that's really going to change the dynamic. I would make the argument that the market had been a little bit caught off guard by the extent of the problems in Russia. And I'd just like you to address, given Russia's historic ability to be very dark and opaque and not really anyone knowing what's going on there, how do you think that's going to affect us going forward as people try to assess how bad it is and, you know, what the duration of the situation is going to be?
Well, yeah, your points are well made. And whether we were talking to the Russian government officials or the grain union or anybody over there, we all got different numbers. Maybe it's not too indifferent than what we have here. But I don't think any of us really know when the Russians decide to come back. I think rain and new crop will have a big influence on their decision. I think just getting the forest fires out will help Mr. Putin fight inflation. But as you saw, the latest inflation data come from Russia yesterday. I mean, food prices are rising 5%, largely due to grain. And when in Russia, food is a dear item. And so they like to keep food prices down or at least steady. And within that, I think their main focus is going to be their domestic poultry industry, which is now expanding 17% a year, and, of course, also keeping food prices affordable for their population. And those are the mindsets. So in my mind, if we don't get rain by the middle or end of September, the wheat markets will have a different look again as we start to think ahead about Russia being out for another year and that the U.S. and rest of the world will have to pick up in terms of filling their lost demand. FSU 12 is the world's largest wheat exporter. They are also the world's largest, what I call, low-cost seller. In other words, they're the Walmart of grain trading. And so when they go, markets rise, and that's why we have seen the abrupt price increase, wheat prices rising historically here in Chicago and in other places in the world.
Jerry, do you have anything to add?
Not too much. Basically, the expectations of the next year and how that comes about. Right now, I don't sense that the Russians are going to make any decision anywhere thinking about it until first of the year. And I would expect right now, if there's not a very good fall at all, they're not going to come back in as an exporter for the balance of this year. If these numbers from the USDA are correct at 45 million, which I think they're pretty well on target, as good as any we know. Now, as to exactly what the final numbers will or won't be, I'm not sure it makes a lot of difference. If they're not going to export, then they're not in the market, and we're dealing with what it is. And so with that being the case, but it's so important, and I think, you know, the one thing that the Russians can't do, putting down this nightshade, is that you still can see if it rains over there. You know, you can still see the satellite data and that kind of stuff. So we'll at least know what's happening from the point of view of moisture. Will we know how much seed they have to put in, all the other issues that are there? No, but I suspect we'll have a decent idea if they're going to have a crop later this fall.
Do we have any more questions on the phone or on the floor? Everyone's good?
Nothing on the phone, I'm present.
Okay, you guys get the last word. Jerry, do you want to tell us your final thoughts?
Well, we come into today's markets, we definitely came in with our eyes wide open about the former Soviet Union situation. The USDA's numbers today definitely show that they've had an amazingly poor crop over there because of the extreme heat they've had for the, you know, they're talking about 130 years of heat situation. But that put together, we also, at the same size, same situation here in the U.S. is that we are going to have plenty of grain available for the other people to take purchases from us. The key to the question is going to be is, can we move it through the system as timely as we'd like to and move it through from the farm state on. From there, I think the U.S. Grain farmer is going to have a potentially a pretty profitable year here with a pretty strong demand and a pretty sizable crop. I don't know that the today's yields are going to be the yields we're going to have at the end of the season yet, but I don't think they're going to be dramatically lower. We're not going to see 160 bushel corn or 42 bushel bean crops. We might shave these things slightly as we go through time. And, but in general, I think that the coming year is going to be watching the world demand situations very closely and seeing how that stacks up for us as we go into 2011, where we're going to have, I think, a very strong situation here, a battle between the various grains here in the U.S. on which one does the American farmer plant.
Dan?
For anybody that didn't believe about agriculture becoming global, I think the Russian drought has just proven that wrong. Years ago, we wouldn't pay a lot of attention. We all remember the 1973 grain robbery very, very acutely. The Russian drought has changed the landscape of agriculture for the next 18 months at a minimum. And so in saying that, we are going to have spicy markets. We in the U.S. Here are blessed with big crops, big harvests, and big demand. It's what the grain trader lives for, at least commercially speaking. And so there is going to be a little fight for acres next year. We probably need another five or six. Weather becomes all important in South America and the Southern Hemisphere, including our friends in Australia. And so for the grain trading industry, I think we can assure ourselves of volatility. There will be plenty of volatility in the months to come, and we'll see how this all plays out. But Mother Nature has lifted or reared her ugly head in Russia, and if she were to rear it somewhere else, these markets will get quite exciting in a short period of time.
All right. Thank you very much to both of you. Video highlights of this will be available on our website at dmegroup.com. Thank you very much for attending, and have a good day.